Welcome to Mobility Matters. I'm Tyler Reeb, Director of Research and Workforce Development at the Center for International Trade and Transportation. Join me in upcoming episodes to address mission-critical issues facing the professionals who design, develop, operate, and maintain the mobility systems that get people where they need to go and transport essential goods for communities and families throughout the country. In this episode, we'll explore a research topic that, for me, gets to the heart of the American experience and the American moral conscience. Several years ago, while touring the Tohono O'odham Nation in southern Arizona, I stopped and talked to some students who attended a local tribal school. I was stunned when they told me that they hitchhiked to school every day because they didn't have a better option. This podcast is dedicated to making sure that students in tribal communities across our nation have better options. This podcast is dedicated to bringing equity and mobility to Indian country. In 1991, the U.S. Congress authorized the Federal Highway Administration to implement the Tribal Technical Assistance Program, otherwise known as TTAP, which worked to build professional capacity within federally recognized tribes to support the management of their transportation assets. In 2017, FHWA, in a highly controversial move, consolidated the seven regional TTAP programs into one national program. 2 years later, in December 2019, FHWA suspended funding for the TTAP program. 3 years later, the TTAP program is still suspended, but there is growing consensus that the program should be reconstituted to provide regionally specific technical assistance for tribal communities throughout the United States. To get a deeper understanding of the origins of the TTAP program, I caught up with Ron Hall, a tribal transportation legal expert and a founding member of the Transportation Research Board's Standing Committee on Native American Transportation Issues. Ron explained that the origins of the TTAP program stretch back to tribal self-reliance legislation passed in 1981.
In 1991, Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act was passed, and that created the mechanism for self-determination contracts and the law behind 638 contracting, which is something that anybody in the tribal communities knows very well across all Bureau of Indian Affairs programs. In 1991, the transportation program became subject to that provision of law. What that did is gave the tribes the authority, legislative authority, to contract to take over what was previously a federal function done by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and make it a tribal program. Prior to that, tribes were not involved in having any of the, you know, responsibilities or the authority or the capacity to do any aspect of the transportation program other than approve a list of priorities that the BIA would bring, and they would concur or add to that list of projects, and that would go forward for funding purposes. So the tribes inherited those road systems that were designed, planned, built by somebody else.
So beginning in 1991, U.S. tribes inherited a wide range of new transportation responsibilities due to changes in federal legislation.
And so really around the turn of the century, around 2000 is when tribes started really building up their capacity to go out and really build projects and redesign and operate as owners of that infrastructure.
FHWA-funded TTAP programs, which were also authorized in 1991 by Congress, provided much-needed training and technical assistance for U.S. tribal governments who were now responsible for a broad range of transportation responsibilities. Cameron Ishak, who served as a lead consultant in the development and rollout of the TTAP program, saw firsthand the unique challenges facing TTAP programs.
TTAP centers serve tribes. Tribes in this country have a very different socioeconomic, cultural, and historical background that state residents and state citizens and state organizations and governments that are within that state, like townships and counties and towns and cities, don't have. So there is that history of and resulting change in governance models and in self-determination that make the TTAP outlook a little bit different.
Equally challenging for tribal transportation professionals is the wide range of road systems they were responsible for planning, designing, building, operating, and maintaining.
The TTAP road systems that the tribal center are supporting are also a little bit different. We're talking about the National Tribal Transportation Inventory. It's about 157,000 miles, but those road miles are distributed a little bit differently than they would be in a state. 31,000 of those are BIA roads. About 26,000 of them are physically on a tribal system and on a tribal land. And the other roughly 101,000 are state and local roads that happen to run adjacent or within tribal land. So it's a much more problematic challenge for a TTAP center to provide the correct training, technical assistance, and technology transfer because of that mix.
Perhaps the biggest vacuum left in the absence of the TTAP program was the access that tribal transportation professionals had to on-the-ground trainers who could travel to a tribal community and provide regionally relevant training for specific transportation needs.
That is a subject matter expert going out to a road, going to a community, going to a local public works agency, and physically being on the ground to discuss a particular need on the roadway system, to show a new technology, or to demonstrate a capability across an entire range of things. We could be talking about anything from signaling to local road safety plans to road safety audits to simple signage and roadway behaviors. So that technical assistance aspect, given the disparities we talked about earlier in the populations, is really a mission critical aspect of what TTAPs were performing up to 2016, 2017.
So there it was. After 2017, tribal governments stopped getting the regionally specific mission critical training and technical assistance they needed to keep their road system safe and equitable. Kelly Myers, executive director of the National Indian Justice Center, understands the link between justice and equitable transportation firsthand.
Transportation and mobility generally are key factors for anyone to survive, much less thrive, in a community that might be rural and economically under the median or under poverty lines. And when we look at tribal communities throughout the U.S., the big key takeaway is that there are very few transit hubs that reach all the way out to tribal communities. Those are often filled by tribal transportation programs or other subsidized programs. And that's just to get you to the point where transit could then take you to an education center, alternative health centers. Tribes have Indian health clinics, but if you needed any sort of triage or emergency, you would have to go elsewhere to find it.
Most poignant is the impact of substandard transportation systems on our nation's most vulnerable.
And of course, we're looking at a large population of children in most tribal communities. We have a large population under 21 in many tribal communities. And so that puts young people on the shoulders of roads that are often in need of maintenance, in need of even striping to make sure that the children who are walking those roads know where there is a safe place to walk, or they're actually walking in the ditches that are next to the roads, which can be just as hazardous.
So there you have it, a transportation topic that bores right into the heart of the American experience and moral conscience. If members of tribal communities are to pursue life, liberty, and happiness, then it is incumbent upon leaders in industry, government, and education to ensure that tribal communities of the future have the resources and trained professionals required to plan, build, operate, and maintain mobility systems that make that happen safely and sustainably. That's a tall order. How can we serve tribal communities better? Fortunately, Kelly had a spot-on five-word response. Wait for the mic drop.
So when we look at the types of variations of needs, we start from very basic facilities all the way up to some more extravagant facilities for a lot of tribal communities, which may just be simply a bus stop that has shelter and lighting and a transit stop for a city bus route. There's a lot of variation in need that's out there. And so the big takeaway, I think, is you have to be able to work with tribes, to develop a needs assessment, to ask them about the needs that need to be addressed, and what priority those needs really are. How can we serve the tribal communities better? We can listen to them.
I couldn't have said it any better myself. We can serve tribal communities better by listening to them. In the months ahead, I'll be working with a team of experts sponsored by the National Academies to host a Tribal Transportation Summit to document the most critical mobility needs facing tribal communities throughout the nation. This effort will gather foundational data to advocate for more equitable and safe transportation systems in Indian Country. Stay tuned for future episodes of Mobility Matters covering this important issue. This episode of Mobility Matters was brought to you by the Pacific Southwest Region University Transportation Center. To listen to the full interviews for this podcast and related links, go to nntw.org/mobilitymatters.